Well, the Summit County Council meeting tomorrow at the Sheldon Richens Building. That starts at 2:15 in the afternoon in the studio, or I should say on the phone with me, with a preview of the agenda. I have Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. Mountain Regional looks like they're annexing some 8 pieces of property. These are all located within Silver Creek?
That's correct. You know, just part of their normal process as properties come in to be developed, they annex in so that they can be part of the district.
So I thought they had a special service district out there to provide water.
Yeah, there's a special service district that provides water in some parts of Silver Creek, but in this area, it's served by. I mean, if you look at the maps associated with the annexation requests. It's contiguous to Mountain Regional service area, so it's logical that they would go into that service area, into the Mountain Regional Water District.
Okay, so no, there won't be any impacts on the district. I mean, they're not like they're losing customers here.
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Let's see. In other business, the council will be ratifying the 2019 certified tax rates. And in a nutshell, could you explain what these are and how they set the revenues for all of the entities that are listed on the agenda?
Yeah. So each year, the assessor and the auditor go through the process to set the rates. And it starts with understanding the property values and new growth that happen in the different taxing districts or taxing areas, and so you know the theory is that with property tax revenue, you're able to collect the same amount that you did in the previous year, plus whatever new growth allows revenue to go up a little bit. So the auditor goes through the process of understanding what that new growth is with the assessor, and then adjusts the rates so that that previous total is achieved, even though in this case, there's higher value. So the present properties that are on the rolls, if they come in at higher value, they have to adjust the mill levy down so that you're able to collect the same amount as the previous year.
So all of these listed are within the Summit County's fund, and you guys don't do taxes until the end of the year. What about the tax rates then for the city councils and the school boards that have to adopt a final budget this year? Those have already been done?
Those are done in a slightly different process, and I'd have to defer to the auditor on the timeline on those.
Okay, because I was going to say that wouldn't give them much time if they have to approve. I mean, if something needed to change, but it must have been.
Well, and you know, the thing is that even though they're different entities and are different schedules for budgets and all that kind of stuff, the property taxes are still collected, and bills are sent out at the same time. So it's just it's probably a similar timeline, but. You know, like we've been hearing on the radio about the school districts lately, they have not set their mill levies yet, and the auditor hasn't gotten their final word yet on what they want those set at. But, you know, they go through their own processes on that.
All right. Let's see. At 2:50, the approval of the recommendations made for the Summit County Recreation Arts and Parks. This is the RAP tax cultural recommendations. Some $943,000 being doled out to 20 applicants. Is the council proposing to change anything that was recommended?
So we the council had their presentations from the two of the recommendations from the two committees 2 weeks ago. There was very little discussion. A couple of council members asked about some specific ones, but I don't believe there's going to be any. I haven't heard of any discussion about changing any of those recommendations.
Okay. And then with regard to this RAP tax, it's something that is voter approved. When does the council have to take action to renew that?
Yeah, so it actually is a question that goes to the voters in the 2020 election cycle. So we have to go through the process of the council putting that on the ballot in 2020. And then the voters will see that at the polling time when ballots go out in October and the actual election day in November in the next year. So we're actually going to start kind of gearing up for that process towards the end of this year. And then probably first, second quarter of next year, calendar year, you'll see the county and the community talking about that reauthorization a lot more.
All right. With regard to the restaurant tax, does that go through a similar process?
Does not. It is, once it was instituted, it just stays.
All right. Let's see, there were county council also scheduled to approve the recommendations of the Summit County Restaurant Tax Committee, some 45 applicants for a total of $3.6 million. Is this the figure the total amount that they wanted or the amount that the county's given out?
Well, that was the request number. It actually, I believe, is just around $2.7 million that was available to grant out.
Okay. Let's see. Resolutions for outgoing staff members Steve Martin and Brent Ovard. I know we talked about these folks last week, but with so many recent departures, I'm just wondering, I mean, is something going on with all of these retirements?
No, I mean, you know, if you look at the number of years that these folks have served the county, what it shows me is that there was a little bit of a hiring bubble back, 25 years ago in the county, and those folks are getting to that point, both within their age as well as just their retirement system, that it's advantageous for them to look at what comes next in life. And you know, it's just part of the process. I think it's just interesting because we had three leaders within the county with Anita Lewis, Brent Ovard, and Steve Martin that just came up within the same couple of months. So, you know, of course, that's a blow as far as experience. But, you know, it also provides opportunity for others that are already working for the county or for elected those seeking elected office or those that desire to work for the county. So it's just part of the churn of our organization.
All right. Then at 4:00, a discussion and possible action regarding the appeal of your determination on the trails at Jeremy Ranch. We're talking about an entry gate in this neighborhood. The owners say that the gate was installed in 2001 and has been allowed by the county. You turned it down, though, saying it was not legal, a non-conforming use. How come?
Well, I mean, the evidence that I looked at, you know, going back all the way, I mean, this really, when you look at the first development agreement, goes back to 1993. It was clear from what I looked at that neither the planning commission nor the county council had made a determination on the gate. And then further, there was lack of a building permit, which was required by the code at the time to install that gate. So I took the position that it wasn't allowed. But you know, that obviously is something that it's already there. And the applicant, or the appellant, believes a different version of that story. So, so this is the process.
So you're asking that the gate be taken out?
Well, that would be the result of it if it was not allowed. That's correct.
Okay. And so why is this in front of the county council rather than a judge? The owners filed a lawsuit last year.
Well, it did originally go in front of the administrative law judge as a first step. And then the administrative law judge ordered that the county manager make a determination, which then sets in place the council being the appellant body. If the appellant doesn't like the decision of the council, as they make their decision, they can take it to the next step.
All right. Let's see. Then at 6:30, another public hearing regarding the potential amendments to the Kimball Junction neighborhood plan and possibly the approval of the ordinance that would amend the Snyderville Basin general plan. Is it likely the council will vote on this?
I believe they're ready to do that. Of course, they delayed the action and the last public hearing or continued that from the last meeting because we did not have a full council to make that decision. And it is the desire of the council that they all be there when that decision is made. It's a pretty important one. So I think they're going to be lined up to have that discussion and decide whether they're ready to move forward.
So it's all well to say that the master plan will be pedestrian friendly. It's trying to provide better connectivity between, you know, an area divided by a state highway. What will the county do specifically to achieve those goals?
Well, I mean, I, as I was reading it again this morning, you know, this is of course an amendment to the general plan, and that, you know, there are some specific steps, both with UDOT and with future developers as property is redeveloped or developed for the first time, that guide how that's going to go. And so part of the next step is to be looking at the code and how we can solidify that around this general plan amendment. Some of it is working closely with UDOT to advance projects that will achieve the general plan goals. And then the last part is for undeveloped property, especially the tech park under new ownership. I'm sure there's going to be some very near-term discussions about amending that development agreement to achieve some of the goals of the plan. So those are the things that I see right up front, and I know there's many more.
What have you heard from the new owners of the tech park? Anything?
Well, they've been attending the public hearings. I think they're waiting to see the results and what the council approves before they put in any applications.
Okay, but no rumblings about what they may be looking at?
I mean, we've had meetings with them, but not recently. So I think we're just waiting to see what happens with the general plan.
All right. Tom, anything else you'd like to mention?
That's all I've got today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:31 now, good morning. Well, Utah ranked 7th among states for overall child well-being. That's according to the 30th edition of the Kids Count data book released yesterday by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. On the phone to tell us what it means for children living here in Utah, Summit, and Wasatch counties, I have the Deputy Director of Voices for Utah Children, Terry Haven. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning.
I guess, first of all, we should note that Park City resident and former school board member and managing director of the Park City Institute has joined your organization as director?
He's our new CEO, and we're happy to have him aboard.
Okay, I think his first day was yesterday.
Monday.
Yes, Monday.
So
okay,
he's actually got a week. Yeah, he's got a week under his belt.
Well, tell us briefly, just an overview of the organization of Utah.
Voices is a statewide child advocacy organization. So we do policy work on behalf of children and families. As most of us know, children don't have a voice up at the legislature, and we are that voice for children. We advocate on a variety of indicators and a variety of issues. We look at health, we look at early childhood education, we do some tax and budget work, and we're also doing juvenile justice work now.
All right. And tell us a little bit about this annual Kids Count data book. What's its purpose? Who is it for, and who is it counting?
Sure. The national data book is put out by the Annie Casey Foundation. They've been doing it, as you said, for 30 years. The book is really about looking at how are kids doing across the nation and who's doing well and who's doing poorly. The basic premise around Kids Count is that in order to affect good policy change for kids, you really need to have good data. So policy should not be made in a vacuum. It should not be made on hearsay. It should not be made on what we think is happening or what we would like to be happening, but what is actually happening with kids. And so the book is really about what's going on with kids in the state.
So how does Voices for Utah Children then use this information?
Well, we really try to look at the data. The Kids Count Group has also funded Kids Count projects in every state. We are the Kids Count grantee, and one of the things that we do is also publish a data book that will come out this fall that looks at county-level data. So we look at, you know, giving that information to legislators to let them know what's going on in the counties that they're serving. We look at the data to say, you know, where what are the areas that we know are problem areas. For example, we know that we have one of the lowest insured rates for kids in the nation, one of the highest uninsured rates. And so that's an area that we work heavily on. That's why we work so heavily on Medicaid expansion and getting the ballot passed. It's why we've worked for years on trying to get Medicaid expansion in the state, because we know that when parents are insured, that kids are also more likely to be insured. And so we know that that will help in the states that have expanded Medicaid. Children's uninsured rates are lower. So we use that data like that to say, okay, where's the problem? What can we do to help?
Yeah.
It's a great resource. And so we get this data into the hands of legislators, into the hands of the press, into the hands of city planners and people who need this data to write grants to bring more money into the state. So it's really a useful tool for a wide variety of people.
We hear so much about Utah being dead last in per pupil funding for education. What the Kids Count data showed is that Utah is actually seventh place in child well-being. So that sounds really
right.
Good, but do we need to strive for better?
Well, always strive for better, right? I've been working for Voices for Utah Children for almost 23 years. When I first started, we were in the top one, two, three. Well, we've never been number one. But we were number two, number three, number four. We've been as low as 14th, and this year we're seventh. So, but generally we're always in the top 10, which is it's a good place to be. It's a comfortable place to be, and I think people. We should pat ourselves on the back a little bit, right? I mean, we're not, you know, Alabama or people, you know, Nevada, which is down towards the bottom. But we do have pocket areas of concern and areas that I think we could work on, chief among them being our health domain. The report is broken into four domains, economic well-being, education, family and community, and health. And health, this year we ranked 21st in the nation, which is, again, lower than the year previous, which was 19th, which was lower than the previous year. So we've been kind of declining in that area. One of the reasons we're declining is our children without health insurance. We've been improving a little bit in that area, but we're still well below the nation. And it's the only domain in the book this year where we actually worsened in a couple of indicators. We worsened in our low birth weight babies and in our child and teen death rates. So those are areas that I think we would be concerned about.
Yeah. Doesn't Utah have that CHIP program, though, to ensure that the children do have...
We have CHIP and Medicaid for kids, but we don't have money for outreach. We used to have money for outreach, but we don't have money for outreach anymore. So many kids don't know they're eligible, which is why the Medicaid expansion was so important, because then adults find out about it, right? They found out that, oh, you know, we have these programs for kids. There's many children in the state who are eligible for those programs, but they're not enrolled. So we need some better outreach into those communities to let people know that, yes, you are eligible. Of course, there's an element of fear in some communities where, you know, a child is a legal resident, but his parents might not be. And so there's a fear to enroll.
Yeah. As you mentioned, education, though, it sounds like we're doing okay there, even though we don't have that per pupil funding up
right
in the, you know, the top 10 or anything.
Right. It's one of the domains that we ranked 12th last year. We ranked 13th this year, so we fell a little bit. The four indicators in there don't include per pupil expenditures, but, you know, that would be an issue. One of the issue areas is young children who are not in school, so that means, you know, ages 3 and 4 who aren't in preschool, basically. And we are at 57%, compared to 52% nationally. So we've kind of lagged behind the nation there. And we're working on those kinds of areas. That's another area. That's why we have an early childhood specialist. That's why we work so hard on making sure we have quality preschool that's available for low-income kids, for at-risk kids, and why we've worked so hard in that area. So we lag in certain ways, but we've improved in that area as well. All four indicators have improved in the areas that we looked at. One of the problems with that per pupil expenditure is every year we get a little more money, but also every year we have a lot more students. So one of the things that they looked at this year, because it is the 30th book that they've put out, they started looking at, you know, how many kids do we have in the state and how's it changed. And the reality is we have almost 300,000 more children now than we did in 1990. And so even in those areas where we've improved over the last 30 years, for example, poverty, we've improved slightly over the last 30 years, but we have 20,000 more kids in poverty than we did back 30 years ago we have more kids.
Yeah.
So it's a huge issue to realize that, you know, there's been an 8% improvement in child poverty, but we have 25,000 more kids than we used to who are living in poverty. So, you know, did we really improve?
Yeah. You mentioned that we won't see the kind of county counts until this fall. So, I mean, can you tell us anything about our children here in Summit and Wasatch counties?
Well, we put out measures of child well-being every year and have for the last 23, 24 years. So we do have county-level information on not all of the same indicators that the national book looks at, and we get our information from different sources, so it's technically not comparable. But yeah, we have a lot of data on the different counties. It's all on county data pages on our website, and it's also in the data book. More on the website, but we do have some in the data book.
Yeah, can you
tell? For example, we know that in economics, one of the chief things that we look at is child poverty, because we know that poverty affects everything else we look at. So anything we do to alleviate or raise children and families out of poverty is going to affect positively everything else we look at. So when we look at child poverty in Summit County, it's 7.2%, where for the state it's 11.0. And so, you know, it's a little bit better. Wasatch, it's 7.6. So both of those counties do much better than the rest of the state. We have counties that have 35% poverty or 32% child poverty. And so many of those counties are our rural counties, which is a problem, because when a rural county has issues, there's not as many resources to help those families. So,
yeah. Is it fair to say that Summit and Wasatch County would do better than in all of those domains?
Oddly, they do in some, not all. For example, the percent of women receiving prenatal care is actually lower in Summit County than it is in for the state, and the same for Wasatch. So that's kind of odd. Not sure what's happening there. and the percent of low birth weight babies, which is not odd, because when people get prenatal care, then they are less likely to have low birth weight babies. But the low birth weight baby percent in Summit is 8.6 compared to 7.0 in Utah.
Yeah.
So a lot of things kind of play into percent low birth weight babies, including things like whether or not they are receiving prenatal care, but also are there multiple births? You know, is there some fertility drugs being used that create multiple births, which will create low birth weight babies? In this state, we tend to have babies later and we start having babies earlier, so some of that can play into it. Plus there's this general notion that our technology has changed so much over the years that some births that would not have been viable in the past now are. So we're making strides in keeping some of those babies alive long enough to be born, even though it is at low birth weight.
So. Yeah. And real quick, I mean, anything else where Summit and Wasatch County need work?
in general, they do either better or kind of at where everyone else is. When you look at exemption rates from immunizations, they're pretty much right at where the states are. Their teen births are a little bit lower, actually, than the state, so that's a good sign. They are actually a little bit higher in the percent of uninsured kids.
Okay.
So,
all right. If people wanted to find out more, where would they go to see that?
So our book is on our website at www.utahchildren.org, and the national book is on the NEKC Foundation's website at aeyc.org.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate your time. Thanks for
you bet.
For letting us know about that. That's Terry.
Thanks for having us.
Haven, she's the Deputy Director of Voices for Utah Children. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It is road construction season, and Summit County is not immune. On the phone with me, I've got John Engel to tell us about some of those projects we are seeing around the county. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning.
So you're with the Public Works Department for the county?
I am with the Engineering Department.
Ah, okay. Well, let's start with some of the work happening at Pinebrook. We've got not only the roundabout project, but also a repaving project?
There is. Right now, we're repaving on Kilby Road from Pinebrook up towards Summit Park. And they should be doing that throughout this week. Probably get that completed like Friday and then move into Pinebrook on Saturday with the overlay. Right now they're in Pinebrook doing some milling in preparation for that overlay for the next couple of weeks. So,
all right. So are we able to have two-way traffic there on Kilby?
Kilby is one-way, one-lane traffic right now. They've got flaggers out flagging it, so you can get through, but there is somewhat of a delay.
All right, so you may just be better off getting to the...
It would be better probably for everyone if they just jump on 80 and drive around.
Okay. And I guess you couldn't close it to traffic because you've got so many neighborhoods that, right, need to access
yeah,
it?
Yeah, there's too many accesses to homes and schools and construction sites to really close it right now.
Okay. And again, you expect to have that then done by Friday?
Friday, that is when we're our target to finish it. If it's not done Friday, they'll be on there finishing Saturday. But unless weather or something happens, it should be done Friday.
All right. Let's see. And then about the roundabout project, that's also underway, construction on that?
It is underway. They're doing grading around the road right now. So there's lots of cones and stuff up, but no really disruption in traffic yet.
Okay. And then we're also, I guess, what can drivers expect there?
Congestion, just like it always has been. But right now, it's probably harder to get around because there's so much activity. But as of right now, there's no work in the road itself. So
okay. Let's see. We also have work being done on the Tollgate Bridge. What's happening here?
Yeah. Last summer, as most of us know, they had that closed for an extended period of time, resurfacing that bridge that goes over 80. And it got late enough in the fall that the weather was too cold to really do the final resurfacing. So they're closing it for the next 3 days to do that, and they'll have to detour around either to Wanship or Silver Creek.
Oh, that's
get on and off the right side, just like they did last year.
Okay, that's quite a detour, huh?
That is quite a detour.
When do you expect...
That is a state project, not really a county project, but...
When do you expect that project to be completed then to...
They should be there. They're supposed to be closed the next 3 days, so the end of the week it should be open back up.
Okay. Let's see. I think there is a website, letsgosummit.com. People can find out lots more information there.
Yes.
Okay. And anything?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Not involved in that, so I don't know a ton about it. But
okay. Anything else you think people should know?
Just as far as the county's overlay beyond Pine Brook, as soon as it's done, we'll be going over to Jeremy Ranch. Probably the first week of July, we'll be over there milling on Sackett from Homestead up to Trelawney and Lower Saddleback and Jeremy Ranch Road.
Oh, you guys are busy this year.
That'll be the next stop on our circuit.
Okay. John, hey, thanks for your time.
Yep, no problem.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Stay tuned. We've got joining us now in the studio, Carolyn Wara with Recycle Utah. Good morning to you, Carolyn.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see. That's June 19th. Tomorrow, you've got your free lunch and learn compost workshop that's happening at noon.
Yep, noon at the Recycle Center. Mary, our education director, is going to be talking about how to compost at home, how it works, what's compostable. It's easier than you think. Come and learn. It's free. Right at noon at Recycle Center. If you want to RSVP to mary@recycleutah.org, you can. Otherwise, just show up. Probably about an hour. And we'll have some snacks, but otherwise, we encourage you to bring something a little more substantial if you want to eat lunch.
Okay. And then on Friday, Solstice, you've got e-waste recycle free day and your annual Uncorked event. Tell me about that.
Right. Friday's a pretty busy day in this town. I think a lot's happening. So if anybody wants to swing by the Recycle Center, we got something on the list of everything else going on. We are collecting free e-waste all day. Electronic waste is one of the worst things you can put in the landfill. There's a lot of heavy metals in there, like copper, lead, mercury sometimes. Those are things that we do not want in our landfill and do not want in our water. This year we have Dell coming on as a sponsor. They are paying to dispose of any e-waste we take from 9 a.m. that morning till 9 p.m. So if you have e-waste, bring it by. If you have a lot, I recommend you come before 3 o'clock because we'll be closing the parking lot to get it set up for Uncorked, which is our annual. I think this is the 8th annual Uncorked. It's a fundraiser for glass recycling. We have live music by Cactus Cola and Lumberjack Fabulous. And then food trucks will have Praise Cheeses and Comrades there. And drinks for purchase from Uinta Brewery and Alpine Distilling. With Top Shelf serving those. So just a big party in the parking lot, kind of funky like we like to do it. $7 entry to get in, and all the proceeds from that go to help us pay for our glass recycling.
Okay. Back though, that's a good deal. I mean, if people do have the e-waste, this is the time,
right.
this is the day to do it.
Yeah, this is pretty unusual. I think in the state of Utah, historically, a lot of electronics manufacturers have kind of had interest in Utah but never actually came in with any funds, and they're kind of starting to come back, and they'll kind of saw our community during Sundance. They were a big player during Sundance Film Festival this year, and they reached out to the city. They talked to Luke Carton and said, how can we get involved? What do you want to do? And he goes, you know, hey, there's this great nonprofit, Recycle Utah. They recycle electronics. Do you want to partner up with them? So I think it's a new thing that we're doing. They're bringing some great activities for kids. It's a first time working with them. We're pretty excited. And electronics are pretty expensive to recycle. They cost us about at least 25 cents a pound. And if you lift up that big, heavy TV and it takes two people to carry it, the math adds up, so it's really nice to have some support to get through on Friday.
Yeah, you would otherwise charge about what?
Right.
For a TV.
Yeah, we would charge $10 to $25 per TV, so a good way to save money. And again, we do collect electronics at the Fall Hazmat Day, the end of September. So if you can't get them all organized or you don't have time to clear off your hard drive, by Friday you can hold on until the fall, and we'll have another day that day with the Sunrise Rotary Hazmat Day.
All right. For those wondering what happened to their recycling bins there at the Jeremy Park and Ride, they are available, just not there.
Right. Yeah. I live over in that area, so I've kind of seen the construction day to day, and we had to pull those bins from the Jeremy Park and Ride, and we moved them to the Ecker Park and Ride. So you'll see them on the west entrance. They're kind of across from LDS Church. And as of now, that's a temporary solution why the Jeremy Park and Ride construction is going on. The Jeremy Roundabouts, all the construction over there, the bins would definitely be in the way of everything going on. So the bins are still available, just temporarily moved away.
So you say temporary. I mean, there's just a lot more room in that Ecker Hill Park.
Yeah, it's kind of a discussion. It's a discussion we'll have with the county, how the Ecker Roundabouts look when they're all done, and if there's a space for them that makes sense that's not obtrusive to traffic, or where their final location will be. I'm not quite sure. It's kind of a conversation with the county at the end of the Jeremy Roundabout program. And when that's done, I think they're anticipating that being done in late fall. So,
okay. And then I think next weekend, is this the end of dumpster days?
This is the end of the spring dumpster days. We do two weekends in the spring and two in the fall. Next weekend is the last weekend for the spring. We take July and August off and then come back in September, October. And again, we have two dumpsters out just outside the Recycle Center on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And one of the dumpsters will be for large household waste, kind of like patio furniture that's made out of wood that's not recyclable. And one for yard waste, like your yard trimmings, clippings. There's a lot this time of year. And then again, no hazardous waste or no business waste. And then we do have some great volunteers out there, and we ask that you're able to be a player in lifting your own waste into the bin. We don't want to hurt Bruce Erickson's back, him lifting your heavy stuff in there. He's usually one of our volunteers on Saturday.
Okay. This is interesting because you have to pay, you being recycled, you have to pay to haul those dumpsters away. What does that cost?
Yeah, it's about $200 to haul each dumpster. And on a typical, I think last fall we hauled the green ones 14 times in one weekend and the trash about six. So the green is usually the bigger one. And it totally depends on the kind of weather we've had. Like last fall we had that big big windstorm. So there's tons of broken trees and everything there. We do get some support from Park City Municipal for dumpster days. But any little bit helps if you want to drop a buck when you bring in your waste. We are saving your trip to the landfill and saving your tipping fees to the landfill. So some appreciation towards us is always well appreciated.
Okay. And then a couple of events happening the rest of the summer.
Yeah.
You've got what?
It seems like our busiest months are always April and June for some reason, I think. So after June, we roll into Green Drinks at Bill White Farms. This is his venue on 224, July 9th. That's 6 to 8 p.m. It's a suggested donation of $5 to $10, and there's drinks for purchase. And Bill White will be talking about a lot of the initiatives he has going on over there. I know he's getting creative with cardboard. We've been working with him on some cardboard in kind of a fertilizer for some of his projects out there. So I think he'll talk about that a little bit. And we do have our annual fundraiser called the 100 Mile Meal. It's all food sourced within 100 miles of the Recycle Center, coming up August 10th. And if you're thinking about that, we're about half sold out for that. So you should start to think a little more seriously.
Okay. And anything else you wanted to mention?
We are closed on the 4th of July. So do y'all recycling around then? I'll be sure to hit up some more rounders ahead of time, but just a heads up ahead of time.
Okay, Carolyn.
Thank you so much.
It's Carolyn.